And we're on. Today is Tuesday, August 3rd, 2010. My name is Meredith Horn, a graduate student of public history and the intern for an oral history project recording the memories of individuals who have a significant association with and knowledge of IUPUI. Funding comes from the University Library, the Department of History's Public History Program, and the University Administration's 40th Anniversary Fund, administered through the IUPUI Office of Community Relations. Today I am interviewing Dr. Scott Ebenbeck, who joined the faculty at IUPUI in psychology in 1972 and serves as professor of psychology and dean of University College at Indiana University, Purdue University, Indianapolis. We are in the television studio in Kavanaugh Hall on the IUPUI campus, where we are recording using both digital audio and digital video. Dr. Ebenbeck, I thank you for agreeing to this interview. I would like to ask your permission to do the following: to record this interview in both audio and video, to have the interview transcribed, to place the interview and the transcription in the IUPUI Special Collections and Archives for the use of patrons, and to deposit the video with the IUPUI Office of Community Relations for such public relations purposes as the appropriate officials in that office deem appropriate. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. Then to begin, I'd just like to start with some background questions so we get an idea of where you're from and who your parents were and that kind of thing. So where were you born?
Okay, I was born in Findlay, Ohio, but I grew up in Fostoria, Ohio, a little bit south of Toledo. Fostoria glass was once made there.
And who were your parents?
Benjamin Franklin Ebenbeck and Norma Kelly Ebenbeck.
What did they do?
My father was an engineering assistant at Union Carbide in Fostoria, and my mother worked in the doctor's office.
And where did you go to school?
At Fostoria High School.
Fostoria High School. Yeah. Did you participate in any sports or anything? Were you
active? I was a school photographer and an officer in a lot of organizations in high school.
Really? So you were pretty active.
I was.
Yeah. So where did you go to college?
I actually went to Bloomington, and a large part of the reason I got there was that when I was a high school sophomore, I got selected to go to a junior achievement national convention at Bloomington, and I think I imprinted to the campus. That's why even now I think campus visits are really important, and I was able to go there to school.
Do you remember what struck you about Bloomington?
The beautiful campus.
Just beautiful. Yeah.
Dr. Wells actually greeted the group, and I remember him well.
Yeah? What was that like?
Oh, very impressive man, very funny.
Yeah, funny?
Yeah, right. And so, Earl Butz was also
really
one of those who greeted us.
Wow. So you got to meet them both in person before
yeah.
you even came here.
That's right.
Wow. So what was your major when you went to Bloomington?
I started out in English, but I got put in an honors, or I chose to take an honors psychology class where they had their very best faculty member come up with a hybrid sort of honors class, which ended up me being a psych major. And it's one of the reasons that I think that honors is so important and to get beginning students in such courses.
Yeah. So what was the faculty like in the environment in Bloomington then?
It was a really positive place. Because I was in the honors program, most of the classes I had were small, and I got involved in research in a number of different projects very early on, and really liked doing that.
Did you live on campus?
I lived in a fraternity house.
Oh, really?
I was even president of the fraternity house a couple of years.
Wow. So you remained active when you got to college.
I did, yeah.
Did you do anything else on campus?
I helped run a political club and was active in student government as well.
Wow. So what year did you graduate?
1968.
That's a big year to graduate.
It was a very big year.
Now, was Bloomington's campus pretty active in the civil rights movement or?
Yeah, we had campus marches during the Selma time around Dunmeadow and downtown, and then would gather in churches afterwards. So I didn't travel to the South, but I was pretty active on campus.
And what did you do just after graduation?
The day after graduation, I went back home, and with 23 of my high school classmates went to Columbus, Ohio for the draft physical.
Really?
Nearly all of us did not pass the draft physical.
Really?
And then the next day I worked at the factory where my father and grandfather and great-grandfather had worked, and then started graduate school at the end of the summer.
What made you want to go to graduate school?
I had a really terrific honors thesis advisor named Jerry Chertoff, and took social psych between my junior and senior years and decided that's what I wanted to go on in. And it was an incredibly strong program in social psychology at Chapel Hill. So I decided to go there.
What was the field of psychology like at that time?
It was experimental social psychologists did a lot of experiments where they essentially lied to the subjects and you know, had set up behavioral situations and then you'd see how they respond. For the most part, social psych has moved away from that, but we tried to replicate real world experiences in the laboratory and then see what the reaction of the students in the experiment was.
Can you give an example?
My dissertation was trying to find out who makes judgments similar to other people, and what I found out is that you're more likely to make similar judgments if you've been in the situation of the person that you're watching and expect to be in that situation again.
Oh.
Which isn't real surprising, but you know, we replicated it in the lab, and
yeah,
it was a fun study to do.
Did you have to go through like an institutional review board and all the things?
Wasn't as strong back then.
No.
I mean, everything got reviewed, but IRB hadn't grown up at that point the way it has now.
So what did you have to do testing on people?
Mainly just get approved by the department.
Oh, wow.
That was before there were big IRB boards.
Wow.
And it's back when there were big decks of computer cards. And so I had a whole office full of computer cards because every time you ran a new analysis, it would take this many computer cards. So
Wow. The
big deal in analyzing the data was everybody'd stay up all night fighting to get in line at the computer center so you can analyze your data.
Wow.
It's really changed.
Yeah, it's changed a lot. So how did you get involved at IUPUI then? What brought you back?
Well, I read in the Alumni Magazine about the formation of IUPUI, and I had loved being in Indiana and actually wrote to the folks who ran regional campuses in Owen Hall and said, hey, I heard about IUPUI, where should I write? They gave me the name of the then psychology chair, Bob Neal, and I got a hold of him, then met him at Eastern Psychological Association meetings. We really hit it off, and then I visited campus. He didn't really have an opening that year, but he was going to have the one the next year, and he was able to bring me in.
What was your impression of IUPUI when you first arrived?
Well, I was up on 38th Street campus, and there were Purdue actually had started building a really nice campus up there. There were 17 acres that's now mainly parking for the fairgrounds, but there were two very nice buildings, and then there was a Burger Chef in between the two buildings. In the back of the Burger Chef had been the World Kitchens for the Burger Chef Corporation.
Oh, really?
That's Hardee's now. And he told me to meet him behind the Burger Chef. And I just couldn't believe it. So when I came for the interview, I was looking behind Craner Building, which was one of the big buildings, and he had to come find me. He said, no, I really did meet him. It's in the back of the Burger Chef. And that's where our offices were.
So did you even come to the Michigan Street area?
Not during my interview.
Wow.
But then when I started teaching, that kind of the norm was that people's teaching load maybe went from 11 in the morning until 9 or 10 at night. I came in the morning all the time anyway, but a lot of people came in late in the morning and left in the evening. And the normative class was an evening class, just a surge of enrollment, a lot of Vietnam veterans among the male students, and
really?
a lot of women who dropped out of college and were now able to come back, or you know, their kids were
so older
old enough
students?
To go to school, so they came back. So often the faculty, at least ones my age, were the youngest people in the classroom because it was very much a campus of returning adults. But we would have classes, I think we all had classes on both campuses, so the big logistics were always getting parking places at two campuses.
Yeah. So what were the other faculty like then at the time?
Really solid people. There had been an Indiana University Department of Psychology chaired by Bob Long, and the Purdue Department chaired by Bob Neal, and they had had weekly gatherings, probably with drinks at the Athenaeum, to, you know, think through how to merge the two departments. And I think the merger happened in 1972. So Roger Ware and I were the first two faculty hired after those two departments had come together.
Wow. So what did your facilities look like then at the Purdue campus? They were nice. They were
the Burger Chef was incredibly modest, little tiny offices where, if when you were advising students, you'd literally be bumping knees.
Well, you got close then.
And you'd hear the work study students screaming sometimes in the evening, and that's because there were mice running around.
Oh wow!
And they would routinely spill grease when they emptied the trash from the Burger Chef, so you kind of had to wade through that to get into the building because the dumpsters were behind our building. And it was a very distinctive odor. And then we moved over to the Cranert building, and that was really nice space.
Yeah.
That's a fine building. In fact, a sister building to that building is at the Purdue North Central campus now, and, you know, it's in great shape, but, you know, IUPUI from day one wanted to move everything together.
Yeah.
And in fact, in my interview, Dr. Neal showed me a diagram of where my office would be in 1974. The psych department was supposed to, science and engineering technology were all going to come downtown, and it turned out that part of technology came downtown, and that building, I think, finally got occupied in 1990. So it was good to learn patience.
Yeah. So what did the curriculum look like in the early 70s?
I actually was on the Educational Policies Committee that was the first committee formed, and I was the representative for psych, and we came up with a planned general education curriculum of what those requirements would be, and then each department came up with its own requirements. We put a lot more emphasis on having electives back then, that now it seems like everything's pretty much required.
Yeah.
But back then we put much more emphasis on electives and also on students having double degrees. And I still think that's a good idea for students to be able to get double degrees, double majors. But with the requirements each department has, it makes it almost impossible for the students.
Did it seem like having older students there was more retention of the material or dedication to the subjects?
I think there was a lot of life experience that people brought in, and I think that the students were really timid at the beginning and intimidated, but they quickly found their way and were, you know, enormously engaged. I'm still friends with some folks I taught my very first semester.
Really? Yeah. So there were some good bonds.
Yeah, I had a young woman in my intro class at 10 in the morning, and I had her mom in the statistics class in the evening. And she and I both happen to have August birthdays, so every year we have a big Leo party. So we stay in good touch. I think she's 83 now.
Wow.
Going strong.
Wow. So what were your class sizes like?
The intros were probably about 80, because that's the size that the room held, and there was a big demand. That statistics class had 52 in it, which was too many, but there were a lot of students who'd been waiting to take it, and here was a new faculty member that thought, well, we'll just take it from him. So we all had an interesting learning experience.
Now, did you feel stretched as a faculty member? Did you feel like you were doing too much, or was it a good amount for when you first started?
Oh, it was really good.
Yeah.
And at that same time, we recruited in a lot of other faculty, John Kramer and John Hazer and Bob Bringle and Bob Davis, Soren Svanum, that a bunch of us all came together, and we really had a lot of fun building up the department.
Yeah. Now, though IU was the sort of head of IUPUI,
right,
what was Purdue's role in that, and how did you interact with Purdue, being in the Purdue campus?
Well, the big deal in our first year was getting undergraduate autonomy, and that meant that we were turned loose at the baccalaureate level, and we put a lot of energy into getting that approval. Before then, I think textbooks and syllabi, everything had to go up to West Lafayette for approval, but Bill Neville, who was the dean, led us through getting undergraduate autonomy, and that was a good thing. I ended up being in the dean's office for a good long time, and then and even now, there's still things that have to be cleared at the graduate level, but over time, this department's really grown up, and the School of Science grown up with full range of doctoral programs, so I think that Purdue's actually been very supportive in that development.
Really? So what was the relationship with IU then at that time?
Well, I mean, we're an IU campus, and so our administrative officers are Indiana University officers, and we're part of the University Faculty Council, and the paychecks come from Indiana University, and the tenure comes from Indiana University. So I think that everybody was, you know, very clear that we are an IU campus, but we gave Purdue degrees.
Did you feel a conflict in missions in the early years between IU and Purdue?
Not really. I mean, because I had gone to Bloomington and knew and loved the place, and you know, Purdue was the learning experience for me. Even though I was in a Purdue school, I don't think I'd ever been to Purdue's campus, and when I went there, I was very pleasantly surprised.
How so? How?
Well, I think there are stereotypes between undergraduates at West Lafayette and Bloomington about what each is like, and Purdue's a great school too.
What did you think going into the West Lafayette campus? What it was going to
be? Well, I mean, I had been told it was just ugly and awful, and it's not ugly and awful. And when Steve Bearing was the president, he did a brilliant job of making it be an incredibly attractive campus.
Yeah, my dad went to Purdue, and he'd always tell me about, he went there in the early 60s, and he told me about how it was just no trees and, you know, just sort of plain and boring. And my mom went to IU, and she talked about how beautiful it was.
Well, but you know, I think one of the positive things at Purdue is how Mackey Arena and Ross-Ade Stadium are right in the middle. You know, it's really easy to go to athletic events up there. The my fraternity had a very prominent house chapter at Purdue, and I went back and forth with those guys.
Really?
So it was very positive interaction for me.
So did you feel any, I don't know, sense of rivalry when you first came and you were going to be at the Purdue school since you were a Hoosier?
Oh, I got a lot of kidding about it.
Yeah.
But I was fine with it.
Were other faculty from Bloomington, or were they from all over, I guess?
Yeah. I think pretty much from all over. Bob Neal had done, I think he'd done his PhD at Purdue, and he was an industrial organizational psychologist, and in fact, that was the first graduate degree we developed, and it's still a really strong degree in the psych department, and he had really good relationships with folks up at West Lafayette campus.
So what goals did you have for your career when you came to the psychology department?
I just really liked working with students, and always thinking about what the next thing's going to be. I've come to the conclusion over the years that IUPUI always defines itself by what it's going to be. That, I mean, we really value where we've been, and we have good friends, and we like what we're doing, but we pretty much define ourselves by the future, and I don't know how we've managed to do that over 40 years now, but I think we have, and that's what makes IUPUI be such a special place. And so, you know, at the beginning we were doing undergraduate autonomy and planning the graduate programs and coming up with the gen ed curriculum, and then we were planning new buildings. I mean, one whole Christmas break, Peter Lowe, who was assistant dean, and I designed a new building, I mean, with input from other people, because there was an off chance we were going to get to build that 1990 building in 1980. Well, it didn't happen, but it was worth giving it a shot and coming up with some serious plans in the off case that we would have gotten approval back then.
Did you feel a sense of identity as an IUPUI campus, or did you feel more like a Purdue regional campus?
Total IUPUI.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Can you describe that, how you felt connected? Because it seems like you'd be so disconnected being
No, it's because so it's where away. I worked. And, you know, if you ask students where they go to school, they say they go to IUPUI. If you read wedding announcements, students say they graduated from IUPUI. If you read, you know, somebody who's a 500 princess, she says she goes to IUPUI. And I think we want students to identify with this campus. This is, yeah. There's something really important about location, you know, where you are. And I think it's critical that we celebrate that the students are at IUPUI and that's where we work.
Yeah. It's interesting because talked to with Dr. Bepko, he being at the law school in the early years, he sort of said we were concerned with the law school and we, you know, that was where our focus was.
Right.
And after talking to Carol Nathan, she sort of, being in the medical side of things, she said she wasn't always aware of what was going on in all of the other schools, but it's interesting that the Purdue side, even being further away than those two schools, would still be aware of
campus. I mean, I was real active in AAUP and in faculty governance from the very beginning, and had a lot of ties with the School of Liberal Arts, with, you know, which was an IU school, and Dr. Taylor, who was the then dean, hosted a really fantastic faculty development retreat at a country club he belonged to out on the north side for liberal arts and science faculty. And since those two parts of the psych department either came from the IU Extension Division or they came from Purdue's regional campus, and so the people in the department from the IU department's best friends were people in the School of Liberal Arts from those departments, and the same way for people in the Purdue side were really good friends with the folks in the Purdue departments. And a really key part of our nursing school were some folks, Ann Belcher and others, who were part of the Purdue faculty, and then they came. I mean, I don't think very many people even know that Purdue used to have a nursing program, but a fantastic nursing program, and it became part of the IU School of Nursing.
Yeah. Now, you just mentioned a faculty development retreat with Dr.
Right.
Taylor. Could you talk a little bit about that and what that was for?
Yeah, he had real passion for making IUPUI real, you know, and moving beyond downtown campus and moving beyond Purdue Regional Campus. And he and some of his colleagues had started a country club, which is no longer there, up on the north side of Indianapolis. And he had us all out there for a full day retreat. Dr. Buhner was there at the time, I think. Dr. Ryder, who was also a vice chancellor and then went on to become a president somewhere else, was there. And it was a real important socializing event to get to know the other faculty and, you know, work in small groups with them across the schools.
Who did you work with?
I remember Bernie Friedman, a man named Kinzer, of course my colleagues in psychology. I remember talking a little bit with Dr. Taylor that day. Jim East played a key role in everything that happened. I think that's probably where I met Jim the first time.
So you developed new relationships through that
meeting. Yeah.
So did you feel like after that meeting the campus felt a little more unified or certain faculty?
It did, yeah, to get to know other people. And people really were very generous with their time and helping one another. And there were a lot, I think because it was smaller, there were a lot more social events back then than I think there are now. That I went to a great dinner party, I remember, at Pete Hanford's house, and a man named John Rateris in philosophy was there, and Bernie Friedman, and we just had a great time, you know, talking about the campus. And then for a period of time, the psych department was having a gathering, like a pitch-in every month, and the School of Science would have a family picnic at least once a year.
That's neat.
So we really stressed the social aspect of stuff.
Do you think that was unique?
Well, at the time and in the place, it was just exactly the right thing to do because there were a lot of young families. In the psych department, we'd all go camping together a
really?
Lot.
Really? Is that a psychological experiment to all go camping?
It was great. We had a good time.
Yeah.
And one time something broke on my car, and Roger Ware, who's an expert at fixing things, and Don Lauer, who also was next, spent the whole weekend fixing my stupid car. So bad, but at least I was able to drive the car home afterwards.
Do you go far for camping then?
We were camping at Yellowwood at that time, okay. Usually Ground County or Turkey Run.
Oh, those are beautiful places.
Yeah, they're great.
Do you do any sort of faculty building experiments or anything while you're there?
No, just being friends.
Just being friends, okay, good. Now, you went from a professor in the School of Psychology to the dean of University College. So could you talk a little bit how that transition happened?
Well, that time that we planned that building over the holiday break, I got to know Neil Lance, who was the director of administrative affairs, really well. And his associate, a man named Will Hine, with whom I'm still good friends, whose father was Maynard Hine, who was our first chancellor.
Okay.
had been Neil's associate director, and Will took a job down at University of Evansville, and it turned out to be the right thing for me to move to that job. And so I spent 5 years working with Neil, working with physical plant and police and personnel and the union building, food service, housing, pretty much had responsibility for the administrative side of the house, and that was really a lot of fun. That I mean, I'm an academic, and that's my first love, but I enormously enjoyed working with those folks who really keep the campus going. And I mean, two of the brightest people I've ever known in my life are Chris Keeley and John Mulvey. She was the HR director, and he was the chief of the university police, and it was really good to get to know those folks who were so capable, and I think sometimes that academics don't appreciate enough the staff side of the house and the really good work that they do. And I mean, when we were planning our first parking garage, I mean, I was sitting down doing all the actuarial tables by hand to figure out if we would have enough parking income to pay off the bond. So I didn't know another way to do it, and that's before we really had computers. But the team of people that I worked with in figuring that out was really fun. And so I did that for about 5 years, and then the head of continuing education for this campus, I was called associate dean for the system, and then I think director here at IEPUI, was open, and I applied for and got that job, which was more academic, and I had a lot of fun doing that kind of stuff. The general studies degree program is a fantastic degree, and the non-credit programs, and those folks were also really enthusiastic and fun to work with.
What are the non-credit programs?
Oh, like computer classes and yoga classes. Oh, okay. And all kinds of non-credit classes. In fact, every semester there's a booklet that comes out along with the Sunday Star, and the one for this fall just came out last Sunday. That it's a really strong program, and I think it adds a lot to the community. And it was fun to get to know that side of things. And then I was associate dean of faculties working with Dean Plater, and one of my colleagues said once, "Hey, Evanbeck, you're dean of everything else," because I kept looking after those departments and the Continuing Education Center for Women and ROTC and the University Division, the Adult Education Coordinating Center, the University Access Center. So it was the Small Business Development Center, 10 or 12 kind of disparate sorts of things run by very good people. And I got to know their areas pretty well. And then we wanted to really focus in on undergraduate education per se, because our retention rates were so horrible and students just weren't successful. So we put the University Division, the University Access Center, and the Adult Education Coordinating Center together into the Undergraduate Education Center. And I ran that as Associate Dean of Faculties for 5 years or so, and then that's what evolved into being University College.
So, being in charge of so many disparate things, how did you, why you, why were you selected to be, to do all of those things?
Oh, I think, I mean, I'm real eager to help get things happen, and I think I treat people right and can help folks make transitions and build up programs, and I like doing that. It's really fun to get to know people and work with them and, you know, center in on students and get done things that'll make the campus better.
How did your administrative work, did it help you in any way when you moved on to working with students again?
Yeah, I think it did, because I knew, you know, I know all the folks who work on campus, and a lot of times relationships are what makes a place work. That, you know, if you know the person, like if you know Rob Halter who runs purchasing, and call Rob Halter and say, hey, what should I do about this? And I think most people are problem solvers. The ones where I sometimes have a problem are people who aren't problem solvers. But I think most people on their jobs like to be problem solvers, and if you talk with them, you can figure out how to solve problems, which are usually problems that students are having.
Yeah. Now, you said that you also worked with Dean Plater.
Yes.
What was that like? What was that relationship like?
Well, when he came first as Dean of Liberal Arts, okay, and one of the things that was really important at that time for Indianapolis was the Pan Am Games, that we attracted them to campus, and a lot of the support for those games, you know, because of Spanish language in particular, were in liberal arts, and I was doing continuing education, and it was also a big time volunteer for all those sporting events in those years. And so I came to know Bill really well when we worked together to build up things for the Pan American Games, and you know, then ended up being on some committees with him. When Dr. Babko became the chancellor, there were two search committees, a small one and a big one, and I was on the big one, and Dean Plater was the chair of that, and it was really good to work with him in that area as well. So I came to see what great stuff he did.
What do you think it was about him that made him so successful?
His vision. I mean, his vision for what we could be and how we could be better, and his absolute tenacity. He really wants, then and now, for IUPUI to be the very best campus it can be. And I think he's largely responsible for how much progress we've made. Did a really good job.
Now, he was also very concerned with undergraduate retention and
he was.
And things like that. So did you feel like you were able to follow his lead when it came to those things?
Yeah, and I think he listened to me. I think that we worked really well together. When we kind of declared a crisis about retention, and Chancellor Babko, Dean Plater, Irv Boschman, Trudy Bonta, Sharon Hamilton, I think Irv Boschman and I went to a summer academy that there was a great group called the American Association of Higher Education, which is no more, but they ran a summer academy, and it was at Breckenridge because you could get good rates at ski resorts in the summer, and plus it was a really neat place. And so we went there for a week and thought through what we ought to do to try to make IUPUI better. So, I mean, I think that's incredible that, you know, you have the chancellor and the executive vice chancellor who have incredible demands on their time, and Trudy, I mean, carved out that amount of time to go to the mountain and think about ways that we could improve undergraduate education. And we came back with a proposal to form a university college.
How did you get to that point? How did you come up with this university college
idea?
We
cast around for models around the country and decided that we needed to have an academic unit that would serve the entering students, with the idea being that if it's not somebody's work, it's nobody's work. And John Gardner, who's the real guru of first year student programs actually around the world, but he, when he talks informally, says the two key things that he sees in institutions where there's success in serving students or having support from the top and a structure to do the work. So, you know, having BEBCO and Plater so firmly committed to the work and then forming University College to do the work was a really good combination.
Now, undergraduate retention wasn't the only reason for University College, correct? There were other goals intended?
Well, that's the primary one, is to support student academic achievement and persistence. We really keyed in on wanting to have a place where faculty and staff could work together to help students be successful. You know, we have pre-college programs and other wraparound programs, but the whole reason for being is student success.
Now, the point that University College was coming up, were the students still older students that were?
We were beginning to make, made a transition. I mean, if you look at the average age now, I think we're still over 25, but the average age of our entering cohort of students is 18.3, I think. So the students who count for retention are the fall first-time full-time students. The fall first-time full-time students are only 38% of the students who start at IUPUI to study in a given 12-month period, but they are the ones where we calculate the retention rate, where we calculate the graduation rate, and they are the students who are coming here to make their way through education. So we do have a special responsibility to serve them along with the, you know, transfer and part-time and other students.
Now, before we got University College, we got the library, right? The University
Yes.
Library.
Yep.
So how was that significant to the creation of University College, and what were the goals of that library?
Well, the building where University College is now, Taylor Hall, was the library on this campus, and about half of one of those buildings on 38th Street was the library for the other campus. And Barbara Fischler, who ran that 38th Street campus, was promoted and came down and ran the overall University Library, and she did a brilliant job of making the case how we needed to have a real University Library. And Dr. Irwin and then Chancellor BEBCO and Dean Plater, you know, completely embraced that, and particularly in terms of technology, that IUPUI, Johnny Come Lately, isn't going to have the huge collection of journals and books that you're going to have in a library that's been around forever.
Yeah.
So we needed to have a library that was as good technologically as any in the world. And I think thanks to Barbara and the others who worked with her, they pulled it off. So it's a technologically fantastic facility. And it's interesting how they've coupled that with also doing a great job with archives and then digitizing those archives.
Yeah.
So it's the right library, you know, having it be a signature building for the campus, set the way it is. I wish that there were a way that folks who need to park closer to it could park closer to it.
That would be nice.
But the building itself is just fantastic.
It really
And when we started University College, the then director of the library was Philip Tompkins, and he and I said, well, you know, we ought to find out how we could get the students off to a better start with information literacy. So we sent a fairly large team out at the University of Washington in Seattle, where the library was an integral partner in their FIG groups, freshman interest groups, which is how they organized the curriculum for beginning students, and learned a lot about how we could integrate library stuff into the first year seminar. And as a result of that, the librarians are central to the work of University College. There's a librarian on every one of the first year seminar and instructional teams, and there are 146 of those every fall. In fact, I'm on instructional team again this fall. We had a great meeting. New librarian, and in fact, this is a librarian who we just recruited to come to IUPUI from getting her MLS degree at the University of Washington.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure she's totally comfortable yet with living in Indianapolis rather
than
Seattle. But,
well, yeah, a little different.
But she's going to be great. But that's made all the difference, to have the librarians be part of the work. And you know, the students learn to use the library. They have real work, doing real, you know, not fake stuff, like, you know, drum something up to pretend like you're using the library. They actually really use the library and the databases in that first year seminar, so that as they move on through the curriculum, they know how to make use of this fantastic library.
Now, we've heard from other people about the Michigan Street Library and the facilities that were here prior to University Library.
Right.
What was it like to be out at the Purdue campus?
Well, it was a tiny collection. It was upstairs in what was called the A building. I mean, it had real, Bill Males was the librarian before Barbara Fischler up there. Great people, you know. Here at IUPUI, librarians are faculty, which is as it ought to be, and, you know, really strong partners in anything you wanted to try to do with students, real responsive if you needed to have things on reserve or get special materials. But I probably spent more time in the library down here because I didn't have any place to be. And so when I would be between classes or if I would come early, it's the building that's now Taylor Hall where I spent a lot of time.
Now, you've also remained active in psychology, correct, in the field?
More just in terms of how I apply the work on how to serve entering students. I don't do straight-out research.
Okay. Well, have there been major changes in the field since your dissertation and your...
Psycholinguistics was kind of the start of it when linguists and psychologists came together to figure out how language works, and huge debate about whether there's a natural inclination to language or whether it's learned, and that consumed lots of journals for many years. I think Chomsky won over Skinner, and then kind of blossoming out of that was cognitive psychology, which, you know, how we learn, how our brains work. That I think the department at Bloomington now is called the Department of Brain Science, that it's made incredible strides in understanding how we learn, process information, how the brain works. Very different field now from where it was.
When you began as faculty, were you doing research or were you primarily teaching?
Oh yes, I was still doing research.
Doing research. Yeah. So do you think there's more of an emphasis today on research for faculty in psychology?
Oh, there definitely is.
Definitely.
And the, IUPUI has always been a fantastic place to involve undergraduates in research, so we would have all these NSF, undergraduate research participation grants, and have students from here and around the state doing summer project with faculty members, which nearly always resulted in publications that, because I was Associate Dean of Science, I got to see what happened in chemistry, biology, geology, the other departments. And that's a real hallmark of IUPUI, is to have undergraduates involved in the research. I think part of it is that we didn't have all the graduate students, but, you know, I think today you're going to find a lot of undergraduates working as partners with graduate students in the faculty doing the research. So that's a real hallmark of IUPUI.
Definitely. Yeah. Now, we talked a little bit about the library and that coming first.
Right.
So when you got University College in the old library building, the Student Center was also in that same building some time.
Yep.
What was that like, sharing space?
Well, it was really positive. That the really good thing is because we were under one roof, we worked together a lot. And I think, I mean, I was worried about this when the Campus Center opened, and I talked to the, you know, Frank Ross and Karen Whitney and others responsible for that work about how could we maintain that incredible partnership, and we were able to do that because we'd put things in place when we were together that we sustained. So a lot of the co-curriculum at IUPUI wraps around the curriculum. So the student mentor on the instructional team for that first year seminar has a newsletter every week that comes from Student Life that talks about all the things that are going on campus that week and can invite the students to go along. The section I teach is focused on the city of Indianapolis, and I have a class over for pizza, for First we go to Broad Ripple, the Art Center, so we can go to an art gallery, and then they come on up, and you know, they're much more talkative, you know, when you're in the house eating pizza than in the classroom, even when you try to get them to talk in the classroom. And they just love how IEPY has all this stuff going on that they're able to take advantage of when they live on campus. And one of the things I didn't realize, because I used to do intramurals, and if you had asked me, MBEC, who does intramurals, I'd say, well, it's probably the psych residents, psychiatry residents, playing volleyball against the neurology residents. But nearly all of these young students who live here on campus take enormous advantage of intramurals that I think it's kind of invisible to the rest of us. And one of the things we desperately need now is a fitness center. And it needs to be right straight south of the campus center, and it would be a real magnet for students,
it really
for everybody.
So you said that you volunteered for sporting events.
Yes.
And you also did intramural sports.
Yeah.
And so can you talk a little bit about that? You said you didn't really do sports in high school, right? And
right.
So what got you so active in athletics?
When I was in graduate school, I started playing handball every day. And when I moved here, I couldn't find anybody. So I started playing racquetball a bunch and then started running and ran marathons. And then I was in a bad wreck.
Yeah, oh, no.
Had a hip replacement, so now I ride a bike instead of running marathons. But it really helps me to be, physically active.
What marathons did you do?
Chicago, three times in a row, 96, 97,
wow.
98. It was great. I loved it.
Wow.
Yeah, you go through all these neighborhoods, and they have bands out, and I mean, everybody's so pumped up. It's
That's
really
awesome.
Fun.
Did you ever do anything in Indianapolis? Have you done the
Oh, I did the mini probably 20 times.
Really? Wow.
Mini's great.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, I loved it.
So you're still pretty active even though...
Yeah, I still go hiking, walking a lot, bike to work fairly often.
So what was it like to volunteer for the sporting events? What were they like?
Well, I mean, it was a rebirth of Indianapolis, and bringing the National Sports Festival here and then bringing the Pan Am Festival that everybody turned out and was really excited to see this great stuff. It's when the Colts came to town, you know, And I think thanks to Bill Hudnut, we really had a rebirth of downtown Indianapolis and a reinvigoration of pride in living in Indianapolis and getting to be part of it. My job for those two big events was all the award presenters. So on a volunteer basis, I would, you know, line up all these people to present the awards at the end of the events. And I'm pretty organized, I mean, probably pretty compulsive, actually. And so I was able to do that, and, you know, then just had this whole group of volunteers who would meet the VIPs who were getting the awards, and then they would present them. And, you know, that was so positive. You know, everybody just loved being here and so proud of the city. And I think our city does a fantastic job of that kind of voluntary activity.
So what kind of major changes were you seeing happening in Indianapolis at that time?
Well, when we first moved to town, there was still a Sears downtown, and Ayers was open downtown, and Blocks was open downtown. But over time, everything closed. And then we were going to do the mall, and there were big holes downtown, but no buildings yet. And then finally, we're able to, you know, the city leadership put together financing packages that the down Circle Mall was built, and you know, first the RCA Dome was built, and then Lucas Oil Stadium was built. That what Hudnut used to say is that a city is a cookie, not a donut. That you know, if there's no center, then you don't have the kind of city that you want. And if you look at some other Midwestern cities, they're definitely donuts, and that's not good. Indianapolis has really been able to thrive because we do have such a vibrant downtown.
And were you active in anything else downtown other than sports and athletics?
Oh, yeah, I'm probably on about 15 boards on a lot of things.
Do you think that was as a result of being a part of IUPUI, you got involved in all these other things? Or
yeah, or just one thing leads to another.
Yeah.
The leadership program for Indianapolis is called Stanley K. Lacey Executive Leadership, and I was in class number 4, which was one of the very early classes, and got to know lots of people in town, and then was on the board for that for a while, and the Urban League and the Arts Center. And
would you say that most IUPUI faculty were involved like that?
I think everybody's involved in something. I mean, most people I know, I mean, it might be Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts, that I think that the faculty and staff here are incredible volunteers for the city.
I know if you're talking to Dr. Bebko or Dr. Plater or Neil Lance, that they've all can talk about, you know, all these other things that they were doing right in Indianapolis at the time.
Yeah, it's just, it's fun. It's a good city to get engaged and do things like that.
Were you using some of those partnerships with your career at IUPUI sort of to help programs or maybe to get maybe psychology and students involved somehow?
Oh, absolutely.
In the community?
Time. Yeah, trying to put people in connection with one another and to make things happen that'll serve the community and serve the campus better.
How did psychology serve Indianapolis?
I think more as people in a volunteer capacity, you know, like school nursing has clinics around and dentistry has clinics around. The psych department has a lot of students out on practicum and internship placements, both in clinical settings and industrial organizational. And the faculty have done a lot of free or almost free consulting on program evaluation to help organizations assess the work they're doing. I think that's just been part of the heritage of the department.
Now, did you become active in the Indianapolis community when you were a professor of psychology, or was that later as you got into administrative? All the time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you think that was something part of your personal initiative, or?
Yeah.
So did you feel like IUPU at that time, since it was so early and it was this sort of new idea, gave you the motivation to go do things like that because you had extra time, or was it just something inside of you that made you want to do
it? I think it was inside of me, but, you know, my colleagues were very supportive of doing that kind of activity. And, I mean, Indianapolis is, I was in a little Kiwanis club that maybe was the first integrated Kiwanis club.
Wow.
And this was in 1972. So I don't think the cultural changes that we take for granted now, not that we've solved the issues we need to solve, but there's been a remarkable transformation in Indianapolis in the diversity of the leadership. That at one time it was all white guys, and you know, gradually there are a lot more women in important leadership, and there's a lot more diversity in the leadership, and that's the way it needs to be. I mean, we're not done with that journey yet, but as I was in Kiwanis and, you know, got to know those folks, and then a friendship there led me to be active in the Lung Association, and I ended up being on the National Board of the Lung Association. So you never know, you know, what paths are going to connect, but when you get to know people and work well with them and follow through, I think lots of new doors open up.
Now, during your time working in administration and the police, and you said you worked with parking.
Yes.
What were some of the major challenges that you saw for IUPUI?
Well, parking's the same challenge we have. We just didn't have enough.
I survived parking
that's
in IUPUI.
Right, that's right. Yeah. Just didn't have enough. And in fact, I was talking with Emily Rand last week, who the parking folks now report to her, and you know, really keeps her busy because there's just never enough, and you know, balancing our parking with demands elsewhere is an incredibly complex job. And the university police, I think, are incredibly understaffed, but I think they do a fantastic job, and they've always really stressed training. John Mulvey was great, and now Chief Norris is great. They've had really strong leadership in that department, and I think it's been really good. They've had cadets as part of the program, so it's students who are in criminal justice programs who also get to work. You know, it's like we want all of our students to do internships anyway, so what a perfect place to do it if you're in criminal justice.
Yeah. What about some of the other departments?
Well, physical plant is huge, and there are more problems than you can count. and they never get credit when things go right, because when the office is clean and the air conditioning's working, nobody notices
yeah.
it. But when the office isn't clean and the air conditioning isn't working, most of us aren't real quiet about that. And so it's an enormous job. And I think that they have really strong leadership in that program. I don't know how many faculty know, but a previous director of physical plant was a big expert in time motion studies, and he did all kinds of work in building services about how can we, maximize the use of people's time so we can have the buildings as clean as we'd like them to be by having people be more efficient. And that was important work, and I think it paid off.
What do you think it was about your particular type of leadership that made you successful in working with all those different departments?
I think listening to people and valuing them. And people have good ideas, and they want to do their jobs better. If you get proof that somebody isn't in that mold, then those are the folks that you need to have who want to do something else. But I think most people do want to work hard and to make things better.
Do you think your work in psychology helped you when you ended up working with so many different people?
I think it probably helped me understand things a little bit.
Yeah. Can you
describe? My fiscal officer would never admit that.
Can you describe any positive relationships that you built out of that, or challenging relationships that occurred from that?
Well, I just think you have to get people together so they can be with peers and focus in on the work. This isn't a big deal, but John Barlow and I started getting together when he was Dean of Liberal Arts once a month just to talk about what was going on. He was Dean of Liberal Arts. I was, Associate Dean of Faculties. Then we invited David Stokum to join us, and then we invited Barbara Wilcox to join us, and then Barbara said, why don't we have all the deans join us? Well, now once a month, all the deans are invited to get together, and it's not a meeting. It's a time where you're with your peers and you just talk about, how can we make IUPUI better. I think there's probably more talk about personal lives by far than there is work stuff, because if you're a dean, your peers are the other deans, and so you really want to keep in touch with folks, because then if an issue does come up, you can build on your friendship to get work done, make IUPUI be better.
Yeah. I think we're going to take a short break here to change tapes.
Okay.
And we're back.
Great.
So I'd like to move on and talk a lot about your time as dean of University College.
Okay.
So in 1986, we got Chancellor BEPCO, and there are three main goals listed by BEPCO for IUPUI: to increase the funding for IUPUI, which had been low, less on a per capita basis for undergraduates at IUPUI than any other campus in Indiana; to enhance the community's image of IUPUI; and to foster further growth in the undergraduate programs. So how did University College contribute to those goals?
Well, for one thing, if you have more student success, then you have a much better reputation out in the community, and you're going to have a lot more successful alums. And if the students stay instead of leaving, then there's much more revenue. And if you calculate the return on investment of having the retention rate up, it's actually hundreds of millions of dollars of tuition. So IUPUI continues on an upward trajectory of enrollment because we're so much more successful in keeping our students now.
So you talked about how you all went together and took this break at a ski lodge and sort of talked about University College and developed these ideas. So how did you sort of come back to IUPUI and say, this is what we want to do and this is who we need to get involved?
Well, IUPUI is really strong on faculty governance. So when we came back, the Faculty Council Executive Committee, I think, assigned the Academic Affairs Committee, the Student Affairs Committee, and the Faculty Affairs Committee to all look at this document about University College and to debate about it, figure out whether it was the right thing to do at IUPUI or not. So those three committees worked all year long and then reported out at the May meeting, and somebody said, well, we think we ought to have a written vote, not an oral vote. And I haven't gone to all the faculty council meetings, but unless we're voting for people, it's almost always just raising hands, but say, okay, we'll do a written ballot. And kind of the implication was that it was going to be turned down, hands down. And I think the vote was 51-8 in favor.
Wow.
Which was kind of strong validation for me that sometimes negative people are loquacious.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then Dean Plater was really active in working with all the other deans, and we appointed the senior faculty. 40 faculty take responsibility for faculty governance in University College, and he was very persuasive in talking with faculty and the deans and coming up with some of the very strongest faculty on campus to take this on.
So what were your facilities like initially? I know we talked about Taylor Hall and sharing space with the Student Center. So what did that look like for you?
Well, when we started out, we were in the Union Building, and in the north wing of the Union Building, which was enormously inconvenient. And in fact, when we moved some units over there, we put these little blue signs all along the sidewalk so students could find how to get over to the Union Building.
Really?
Yeah, and so then we were there, I don't know, for 3 or 4 years. I mean, it was a non-trivial length of time.
Was it difficult to get students to come over there? Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, couldn't have been a worse location to be serving students. And then when the library was vacated, Bebko and Plater, along with Herman Blake, were very supportive and said, we need to move this unit back to the middle campus. And they came up with the funding to do that. And a lot of the funding had to go to stuff for the whole building. So they did all the windows and, put in a second elevator. And lots of the really expensive stuff was for the whole building, not just for the top two floors. And then we moved into those top two floors. And I remember having this epiphany, like I had a new job. It was like I didn't even work at the same place anymore, because you'd go outside the building, there were students everywhere. And that was so refreshing and wonderful, because, 38th Street was in the backwater, the Unidad was in the backwater, and finally I got to, be on campus right where the students were, which was great.
Yeah, so did you feel an immediate shift in how students reacted to University College?
Oh yeah, it was just, incredible upswell of activity. And about the same time we were starting all the mentoring programs, so that students' mentors were on those instructional teams for the first year seminar, and we had developed all sorts of academic support programs. And before then, we called ourselves a PCP campus, parking lot, classroom, parking lot. And the students would, if they had any time, would study in their cars between classes. There was just nobody around. And then by having those student mentors and leadership, all of a sudden students started to be on campus, hang out on campus. Nancy Chisholm and I decided we needed some outdoor furniture. We're told, well, nobody, wants to sit outside. Well, we bought outdoor furniture, and nearly every seat's used all the time.
I love the outdoor furniture.
Yeah, students love it. Yeah. And then Nancy came up with that brilliant idea of putting those informal study spaces in business, being education, social work, same deal. Wherever you put seats, students are gonna gather. That's what we did with the renovation of the top two floors, is put in some nooks and crannies and places where students could gather. And until we had the campus center, it was almost always solid bodies in Taylor Hall. Students sitting all over on the floor. And then the campus center has been transformational for the campus. But I think when the Multicultural Center opens, in a month or two, it's going to be the same thing, because the first floor of our building will be a warm, inviting, student-friendly place, and we'll see the same kind of transformation when that opens.
So what were some of your personal initial goals for University College?
I think to to form the faculty, that to develop a faculty culture and make sure that the faculty voice was real. So the faculty are all on committees. We have monthly faculty assembly meetings. We have a retreat every semester. I don't think there's another faculty body on campus that's together that much. Our meetings are at 3 on Friday, and often they're not over until a little after 5.
Wow.
So these are really dedicated folks. The attendance is fantastic. They all come to the retreats and actually plan out what we're going to do to make the work better. A couple years ago, we decided that we also ought to have a combined faculty and staff retreat. So we started doing that in the spring, and that's worked out really well too. That the faculty and staff, you know, academic advisors know one another from the instructional teams, but it's really good to have them together at a place apart where you can really focus on the work in a retreat way too.
So what's the relationship like for University College to the rest of campus, to say the medical school being so large?
Well, we overlap with everybody because all the students start in University College, and so we do orientation for everybody. We organize learning communities for everybody. We have a bridge program for a lot of the students. Ones who are dual admits start their advising in their home schools in their very first semester, but they still are in the learning communities and first year seminars that we organize. And we have a lot of joint positions where students or advisors are half in University College, half in liberal arts, half in University College, half in nursing.
Wow.
Because we really want to make sure that we know what the school's expectations are for the students so we can be accurate. So those folks who are in joint positions can keep us all up to date with what's going on in schools and also let schools know what we're up to. So one of the things I've said over the years is that we're a place where the campus works together to support entering students. It's not and never should be a place set apart like with a moat around it or something. That's
drawbridge.
Not what it's for.
Yeah.
It's to be maximal blending with the rest of the campus.
So what are some of your initial duties then?
Well, beyond getting the faculty culture going, helping to pick the rest of the administrative team, very active in getting grants. That what really launched our work was a very substantial grant from the Lilly Endowment, had a lot of support from them, from Lumina, had a huge grant from the Pew Charitable Trust to do some joint work with Temple University and Portland State University called Restructuring Urban Universities for Student Success. And so to find out what other places were doing a really good job so we could learn from them and they could learn from us. And we started calling ourselves critical friends of one another. It's that thing that I was talking about with the peers, that if there are other people doing the work and they know the assumptions and they know the vocabulary and they know the challenges, those are really good people to learn from so that you can do a better job.
So did you do a lot of traveling at that time to go see these other schools and how they...
That's right. And we've had dozens and dozens of campuses visit here too. So it's really been a two-way street in learning, that people come here to learn and we go a lot of places. There's a National Resource Center for first-year students at University of South Carolina. We've been regular participants there. The folks who had run that moved on to start the Policy Center on the first year, John Gardner and Bessie Barefoot, and they named a dozen institutions of excellence for first-year stuff and then published a book. And there's a chapter about IUPUI in there, and we got to know the other campuses that were part of that book. And then they started another project called the Foundations of Excellence in first-year programs, and we were in the charter group for participating in that project, which was a really comprehensive review of all the first-year work and how we could improve it. So finding out about cutting-edge sorts of things that would help students has been at the really heart of our work.
What are some of those cutting edge things that you learned from other universities?
Well, the bridge program, that have it, rather than having students just come to class on the first day of class and mm-hmm. say, well, here you are.
Yeah.
Bring them in the summer and have a 2-week bridge program where they can become familiar with their major, become, you know, a little bit of brush up in writing and math. You're not really teaching writing and math. You're reminding them what they used to know so they'll be ready when school starts. Getting them to know other friends. That in the bridge program, we have a gathering on the first day where we say, well, we're glad you're here. You can hear a pin drop. It's just like everybody's real embarrassed. They're staring at their shoestrings. And then on the last day, we have a graduation from Bridge, and they're all just in there screaming. They've totally bonded the campus. They're good friends. They love being here, and they just have boundless enthusiasm. And so what I think is that by coming to the Bridge, they find out there are people they like. They find out there are people who are like them, and people who like them. So, you know, they form that good social bond, and especially if they're low-income first-generation students, they don't have to deal with worrying about that kind of stuff the day school starts. It's like, well, I hope I know where I'm going to park. You know, I know where my classrooms are. You know, I've met the students in at least one of my classes before. So they're really ready to hit the ground running, and it's made a huge difference.
So what activities do you do during the Bridge program to get them from hearing a pin drop to friends?
Well, I mean, they do some brush-up stuff in writing and mm-hmm. math. They work on the principles of undergraduate learning. They do scavenger hunts. They get cameras, and they're part of the scavenger hunt is they're asked to take pictures of different stuff. So they're formed in groups, and they'll have a picture standing in front of the counseling center, standing in front of the registrar's office or whatever, you know, and then they come up with really creative poses when they make those pictures. But, you know, and then we make a slideshow out of that we show the last day, and they have great fun with it.
That's amazing. Yeah, because when you get to campus, you can imagine just not knowing where anything is.
Right.
I didn't know where anything was.
Oh, yeah, it's baffling.
Yeah. I think I got a ticket my first time on campus because I couldn't find visitor parking.
Well, when I was running parking, we gave a ticket to the president once.
Really?
He wasn't amused. But oh well.
Wow. So you talked about your initial duties, and you traveled a lot and learned from other schools.
Right.
What did you hope that those schools took away from IUPUI when they came to visit here?
Well, I mean, with the Bridge, with first-year seminar, with the instructional team, I think we've come up with some practices that really work, but we keep... You know, people here keep in touch with folks there, and we continue to learn from one another. That University of New Mexico has a university college model that's just fantastic. And mm-hmm. their dean came here and led our retreat one time. We got some good ideas from him. Then they got some good ideas from us. And then I happened to have been with them last month at one of those summer academies. In fact, it's the same summer academy, but now run by a different group where we formed University College. And they have some great stuff going on now in mentoring. And so I'm hoping we can have a couple people from here be in touch with a couple people there and see if we can't do some joint work, maybe get some joint grants, because we're two of the places that are doing the best job right now with mentoring sort of work. So if you get static, you're quickly gonna go stale. And so I think it's really important that you continue to look around and see what's going on other places. And, you know, the students keep changing and their expectations keep changing. University College puts a huge emphasis on research. So we assess our programs and then change them. I mean, if they don't work, you know, you don't do research for the sake of doing research. You do research so you can make the programs be better. And Vic Borden, when he was the head of IR on our campus, said to me once, well, I'm surprised you let people see negative results. Well, I mean, if you only ever had positive results, you're not
growing.
Practicing
yeah.
full disclosure.
Yeah.
It's not going to be that everything's always going to work. So I think it's a really good thing to assess the programs and then change them and improve them.
Now, how have you been using University Library? How do you use those assets? You talked earlier about how that was a big goal.
Well, in the first year seminar that I teach, the theme is discovering Annapolis. And so one of the things that students haven't had much experience with is differentiating between primary sources and other sources. And right. And particularly with the web, like it's all out there and isn't it all even, and you know, stuff is stuff. And so the librarian last year had the students go into the digitized map collections of Sanborn insurance maps. So these are maps from late 19th, early 20th century of where everything was in Annapolis. And so part of the assignment from the librarian was for the students to find out, well, you know, pick something you really like today, like the Colts Stadium. We'll go find out what was there in 1890 or 1910 and then do some minimal research on the company or the business, whatever it was. And you know, that isn't a be-all and end-all for getting students familiar with primary sources, but then she coupled that with some other exercises that she'd come up where the students use the web. And I think they left with a much better grasp of how primary sources are really important. And if you're going to do research, you have to go there. You just don't, you know, Google it and then assume that you have accurate information.
Yeah. Now, how has University College utilized computer literacy and computer knowledge on campus?
Well, when we first started the first year seminars in the mid-90s, we would be spending the first 4 to 6 weeks to get students up on email. And I remember a really irate student once who quit because part of the assignment was using OnCourse, you know, which is our web-based thing, and she said that was an impossible demand. Well, just with the incredible sophistication of society in general, that we have our students now have their emails up and running before they even come to orientation. And so we used to, in fact, have a technology person on that instructional team. We don't need that at all now because the students come with that knowledge. And then we do use OnCourse a lot. And so the students get familiar with that platform. And I think it was because we universally adopted it in the first year seminar that helped it grow on campus overall, because the students all had it there, and then they went to their next classes and said, so where's the OnCourse syllabus? and over time, you know, now nearly everybody has their syllabus up on OnCourse, and it helps students a lot.
Yeah, I have to use OnCourse all the time. But so now, just for my knowledge, how does the University College receive funding? How does it incorporate into the bigger IU system?
We're funded, as is the Honors College, as a unit with campus funding. That it used to be that we were funded from the appropriation, and then we took the taxes that all the schools have off the appropriation, which was kind of a wash. And Dean Sakotmi said, well, let's just have the Honors College just be funded the way my own office is funded, and we'll also have University College be funded that way. So it's just funds that come from a tax on all the schools.
Okay, because I know, talking to the other deans, that the switch to responsibility-centered budgeting sort of changed how they received money and how they viewed their role in recruiting students and that type of thing. But with University College, you're sort of getting all the students.
Right, and we, RCM served us well too, because we've been pretty successful with grants, and we get to keep the indirect cost recovery money, and we get some minimal money from some of those sections of the first year seminars. We work to minimize the instruction we do, because that's not our primary mission. The schools teach the courses, and we're there to serve the students, but we have a few classes, and some income does come that way. The grant money is really important. It's made a huge impact here.
Now, how do you stay with the students? You talked about recruitment and helping them when they first get here. How does the University College help them as they grow and to get them to stay so that they can finish their degree?
Well, I think we give them a really good orientation program, and then they're really well served by the bridge. Then the learning communities. We have thematic learning communities. And then we call our primary courses for entering students gateway courses, and have a really strong program of support for the faculty who are teaching those courses and do faculty development with them, and then have a lot of wraparound programs. So study sessions that go along with the classes. Sometimes they're required, sometimes they're not. We help fund the Writing Center. We help fund the Mathematics Assistance Center. Any place where we can be a partner to help students get the academic support they need is what we try to do. There's a resource center in the BEPCO Learning Center on the second floor of our building where students are there to answer any questions that students have. So if they need to track something down, they can go there. I mean, it's about academic stuff, but they go and they track it down. If there's not free academic tutoring, they'll help the students find a tutor who's been approved by the department, you know, that teaches that course. So I think it's been a real help to the students to have that kind of a resource center.
Do you make the students aware of all of the services that you offer then during the orientation?
Yeah, there and also in the first year seminar. And what I found is students want to know things when they want to know it.
Yeah.
I think the way that we used to do orientation was we put them in a room, and everybody who thought the students need to know something went in and talked to them. Well, you know, they didn't remember that. And a lot of times then in October, we'd say, well, you're naughty because we told you that back in July. Well, they didn't need to know it back in July. And so another thing that's been part of our heritage is we have walk-in advising. So from 8 in the morning till 7 at night, plus on Saturday morning, a student can come in anytime and see an advisor. And I think that's been really helpful, because the old model was you had to make an appointment. It was hard to get an appointment. And then oftentimes students weren't able to keep the appointments they made. And so it's like, you know, me going to the ATM or the stamp machine. It's so much better than going just when something's open and waiting in line. So they can come and talk with an advisor when they have something they need to know. And then I think we do a really good job of communicating with the students on email that this is coming up or that's coming up, to give them reminders.
So how do you recruit faculty for University College?
Well, the instructional faculty are appointed for terms. In fact, those letters have just gone out today. So they're appointed for 3-year terms. Then we have a lot of adjunct faculty who also get appointed for terms. And then in terms of the instruction for the first year seminars, we have a pretty stable base of people who have taught for a long time, but we're always recruiting new folks. And in fact, I just met with a man who works for a foundation out in town yesterday, who's going to be a brand new faculty member working on an instructional team this fall, and he's so excited that he used to be a dean of students and he used to teach all the time, and now he never gets to see students. So, you know, that's really fantastic when you have somebody with that level of expertise out in the community who has a passion for teaching, and we can provide a place that will really help him do what he likes to do, and I know he's going to be a great teacher for the students.
Are there specific personality traits or qualities that you're looking for when you seek faculty?
I think it's a passion for student learning and supporting students. You know, and the effective way to teach anymore is not to tag. Two guys, Barn Tag, wrote an article called From Teaching to Learning. And so it's what important, it's what I teach, or is it what the student learns? Well, you know, teaching and learning go together, but what's really important is what the student learns. And what TAG says is that we have educational enterprise where we tell them to sit down, shut up, memorize it, take the test, do a brain dump, sell the book back.
Yeah.
That's not what any of us want. And so, we, you know, the standard old lecture, you know, still works in lots of contexts, but active learning where students are working together, working on projects or solving problems or doing service learning connected with a class or preparing to do undergraduate research, those are the things that really get students engaged with their learning. And so it's helping all of us to know more and better ways to have that happen.
And as the dean, do you get to work with students still? Do you get a lot
I teach every fall.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So you've definitely stayed in touch.
I do. Yes.
What do you love about teaching?
Well, just I mean, the students are so enthusiastic, and you know, and they the one I teach is students mainly live in Ball residents. They're from all around the state, and they're pretty intimidated about Indianapolis because it's a big city, and to just help them become familiar with all the great stuff that goes on in Indianapolis. And it's fun to see them come alive, you know, pick their majors, get into their majors, because so many of them are so competitive that when they finally get into nursing or get into radiology, I hear back from them and they're so excited. And then one time, a friend's son was in a terrible wreck, and I went to the hospital, and the nurse taking care of that boy was one of these students. So that
really?
Was really special. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So how do you think University College has helped to sort of centralize IUPUI and help it to create its own identity apart from Purdue and IU?
I think it's being really upfront. You know, you're at IUPUI, you know, our mascot is the Jaguars. You're going to love it here. It's going to be a great place. The orientation leaders are just fantastic. It's the students who run orientation and do the campus tours with them and get them off to a good start, and they're like bottled enthusiasts. They're just unbelievable, and that positive tone they set, that, you know, we're here for serious learning, but it's also a really good place, really gets students off to a good start. And then those students who do that orientation program are the same students who are on those first year seminar teams in the fall, so they help students make a really good bridge into their first years.
Are there do you receive a lot of support from the different schools at IUPUI?
Yeah, we're partners with all the schools at IUPUI.
I mean, and do the, I know I have friends in the medical school who really appreciate that when they come in as first years that they have mentors that will
right.
sort of help them, and then they're eager to become mentors for other students.
Right.
So the medical school, does it require more of that from University College to provide mentors as opposed to maybe liberal arts or?
Well, we're just undergraduates. So like for the graduate professional programs, we don't work with them. But the, you know, there are a bunch of undergraduate programs in the School of Medicine. And,
yeah.
And we're very supportive of those students. We have special sections of the first year seminar that are on health careers in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because when students come, they think that they're doctors and nurses, but they don't know they're cytotechnicians and radiologists, you know, all these very specialized careers. And in this course, we help them see this incredible range of options. And I think that served them really well.
Now, have you also been able to help in sort of merging the identity of IU and Purdue when students come in? Because I know it can be confusing when you come in to think.
Yeah, we just talk IUPUI.
Yeah.
You're here and it's called IUPUI.
Because it is, your degree will end up saying,
right,
you know, IU
right.
or Purdue, and it
right.
gets, I know a lot of graduate students that are, you know, am I IU or am
right.
I,
right.
how is that related?
Well, I don't think we can have everybody have a tattoo, but.
Yeah.
I just want it to be IU. You know, I think the way we do the logo now is really good with, you know, the IU colors and the Purdue colors, and
yeah.
Amy Warner's done a great job of thinking that through, and I think there's really strong branding now of IUPUI.
Yeah, definitely. When we talked to Dean Kellum, he talked about getting involved in Division I sports and how just having the name of IUPUI going by on maybe a ticker.
Yeah, I think it really helps.
Has really helped
right.
with the branding of that
I
name.
I mean, over time that, and I think as this, you know, our students stay here, that our students are primarily in-state students, and they primarily stay here after they graduate, and they know where they went to school.
Yeah.
You know, and they're proud of it.
Yeah. Yeah, you're growing the alumni yourself.
Yes.
Now, how has University College sort of changed its methods over time of how to recruit students? I know you talked about taking a lot of things away from other universities, and what changes have you made?
Well, we've found some programs have not been successful. One of the academic support programs we had in the beginning was it was totally mandatory. It was totally voluntary that you told students, well, you know, this is a really good thing and you ought to do this, and they didn't choose to do it. And so we've ended up thinking that a lot of programs need to be mandatory, that colleague of mine who's done a lot of research with first generation students says, bottom line, underline, that options don't work with first generation students. That, and you know, generalizations can be difficult, but there's truth in that one, that it's the same deal that students used to tell me that, well, a great thing about college is you don't have to go to class. Well, what's that about? You know, when you're in high school, you have to go to class. When you get a job, you have to go to work. So why do we want to put such a importance that in college you don't have to go to class? Well, yes, you do have to go to class. Our psychology and business and math departments did research, and the students who didn't go to class didn't do well. And so, you know, we now have mandatory attendance at IEPUI, and we withdraw students from class who don't go. I mean, the faculty and department have to decide to do that, but they found that students are much more successful when you say, yes, you do have to go to class. And I got a lot of pushback on that. Well, the students are adults, and if they don't exhibit adult behavior, they have to live with the consequences. Well, if the consequences is getting flunked out of school and having a whole bunch of debt follow you, this is not a good consequence. So, you know, putting a positive tone, yeah, we expect you to come to class. That, you know, you paid a lot of money to come here. We want you to graduate, and you're going to graduate when you do come to class.
No, and they know going in what they're expected
That's
to do.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
So what are some changes that you still want to make?
I think a huge gap is financial literacy, that our students are not literate about finances. As recently as 3-4 years ago, I was still fighting with people about credit cards because they were pushing credit cards on the campus. And I said, we can't do this. I watched it happen with my son, and I paid off his credit cards. Credit cards and students are not a good mix. And so we're trying to get students a lot more knowledgeable about making good financial decisions. We have a lot of plans underway to try to launch some really significant work in financial literacy, and I think that's going to help our students a lot, because our students are about half low income, and they and their families will really benefit by us being more intentional. We talk about physical fitness. That's why I want the fitness center. I think we need to talk about fiscal fitness too. It's a life skill that would serve our students well. We've developed a personal development plan that we use in the first year seminar, where students record where they have been, where they are, where they're going in terms of educational goals, when they think they might do research, if they're going to do it, when they might do an internship, when they might study abroad. It's like keeping a journal, kind of, to have them be more serious and in a supportive context, think that through. And the faculty and the advisors are working really hard on how we'll ramp that up and have that be something that will serve the students well throughout their whole undergraduate career. The Principles of Undergraduate Learning are award-winning for IEPUI. It's a brilliant way to approach student learning, but one of the things we still need to do is to document the student work more. That if we say a student's learned something, just saying that you got a B or an A or whatever doesn't give you any real evidence of the student work. So I think an important aspiration for the campus is to get to a point where we can look at that student work and say, well, this is, you know, how much more the student knows as a function of having been here.
Now, how has the student body changed since you've been at University College? I mean, you talk about the low-income students,
right,
and primarily from Indianapolis,
right,
or Indiana,
right,
area. How has that changed since you began?
I think we've been pretty stable, that it's been about half first generation for a good long time, half low income, and predominantly in-state. One of the things that's been really great with this enrollment shaping is getting more out-of-state students, especially getting more international students. We're a great university, and our Hoosier students really learn from getting to know people who are different from them. You never know, you know, what will happen. I mean, maybe they'll get to go visit that student's family in a different country. Maybe they'll decide to go try to do study abroad there or work there someday. That the more ties we have with the rest of the world, the better. I just finished a book called Caught in the Middle about the Midwest, and the places that are most successful appear to be ones that are most diverse with the most immigrants that really get it about globalization. And the author's not very complimentary about what he perceives to be Indiana's attitudes about globalization. And we have these shining lights like Cummins, you know, and other places that are really overseas. But as a state, we need to do a lot more than we're doing right now.
Now, I talked to some of the other people that have been significant in IUPUI's history, right. And they have talked about how IUPUI is perceived to have this particular job of serving low-income families in the Indianapolis area, and how that's sort of been a challenge to try and reach out to outside of the state, even because there's sort of, you know, this regional campus that is designed to serve in-state families. So how do you feel about that and changing that?
Well, I think it's not an either-or. I think we're Indiana's public university set right in the heart of Indianapolis public schools, where the outcomes are just horrible despite having a fantastic superintendent right now. And I think part of our responsibility has to be to find more ways to partner with Indianapolis Public Schools so we find pathways where students who reflect diversity make it through high school, make it through IUPUI undergraduate, make it through the med school. So I wish that we would embrace that even more than we do. We have lots of pockets of stuff going on, but there, as far as I'm concerned, there's no such thing as doing too much with Indianapolis Public Schools, because that's where we are, and that's the future of Indiana. But that's not in opposition to bringing in, you know, lots more students from around the state and students from elsewhere. That I think we need to serve where we are as we live out our aspiration to, you know, have more students from overseas and from around the country. It's just part of our mission. That it's not as central to our mission. Well, that's not a good way to say it. When we didn't have a community college, we were the only game in town. Well, you know, now we have Ivy Tech. We're really good partners with Central Indiana. I think the partnership between Central Indiana, Ivy Tech, and IUPUI is by far the strongest such relationship in the state and a model for most of the other regions. So that really works. And tons of IUPUI students end up going over to Ivy Tech to take classes. The pattern now, Vic Borden coined the term swirling, that students will be here, there, then they'll be back, you know, be at both places. And that's okay. It's what serves the students best, but it's clear that mission of open access is not IUPUI's mission now, it's Ivy Tech's mission. And then our mission is to work with Ivy Tech to figure out how the students can be more successful there and then come here.
So how do you encourage that success when they get here?
I think to have high expectations for them, to say, you know, we're really glad you were at Ivy Tech, you know, we know that that they served you well, and we need to figure out how we build upon what you learned there so you'll eventually graduate from here. And a lot of that has to do with having a more free flow of information. There was an article in the newspaper yesterday by Ken Sauer down at the commission who says that we just need a common course numbering system and we need common gen ed core on all the campuses.
On all the campuses?
Yeah. It's hard for me to see how we would do that. We sure won't do it easily.
Yeah.
But, you know, other states do have common course numbering. I don't think that's a bad thing. That, you know, if you've had Math 120 one place, we ought to have mechanisms in place to make sure that your learning is equivalent. And so when you move someplace, you'll know better than you know right now what transfers, but more importantly, what you still need to graduate. Because a student will come here, you know, with 60 some hours and think, well, I only have 60 left to take, and they might well have 90 left to take. Because it doesn't matter how many you transfer, it matters how many you still have to take. So we need to get a lot better about making it crystal clear to students and parents about it's the degree requirements in the end that you need to pay attention to, mm-hmm. and then how do you build up toward that.
Now, you mentioned their partnership with Ivy Tech. Could you talk a little bit about why that's so strong and how that got started?
Yeah, we, Carol Nathan and three other people and I met with five people from Ivy Tech for years, you know, sorting it out, you know, how we would build this relationship, what sorts of things we'd want to see happen. We had joint, our faculty went over there, their faculty came over here, just all kinds of collaborations took place. The math department, the two worked really well together. Did Kara tell you the story about the one meeting that we had?
I don't think so.
Okay, so one meeting we weren't making any progress,
mm-hmm.
and Carol's really tenacious. So we go in the room, and she handed out the minutes. She didn't hand out the minutes of last week's meeting. She handed out the minutes of this week's meeting instead of an agenda. And she said, "Is this okay?" It was a brilliant strategy.
Yeah,
I think you probably only pull that off one time in your lifetime. But it got us over a critical hump that, okay, we've been talking a long time. Here in the minutes,
yeah.
Let's just do
this.
This
is what we're doing.
And then we approved it. It was great.
So why do you think that relationship's so strong?
I think people on both campuses are really of goodwill, that they work well together, that... For years, I've helped put on a statewide conference on student access and success, and folks from Ivy Tech are strong partners in that conference. We usually have the fall one at Ivy Tech's campus out at Fort Bend, and we have the spring one here at IUPUI. When we had a program review of University College last year, Kathy Lee, who's the acting chancellor up at Ivy Tech, was on that team. So I think structurally and in terms of personalities, they're just an incredible amount of going back and forth, learning from one another, and trying to make stuff better for students.
Now, what role has Chancellor Bepko played in University College?
He and Dean Player were really the founders. Mm-hmm. They were on that original team that went to Breckenridge, embraced the idea, championed the idea. When the funding for Bully Endowment got us started, then Miles Brand was the president of Indiana University, and we were successful in getting some strategic directions money. And then Dean Plater and Chancellor Bepko provided the permanent base funding that we needed to have to do the work. So they were absolutely critical to pulling this off.
Has Chancellor Bepko continued to work with you throughout the process?
Oh yeah, I still keep in touch.
Yeah?
Yeah. Bounce ideas off. That we were the incubators for the honors program for 10 years, and then, you know, it grew up enough that it became its own honors college with its own dean. And as we were pulling that off, the Bepko scholars and fellows are an important part of honors, and Chancellor Bepko would come back for the events and get to meet the students, and, you know, is always so gracious with them and supportive of that program.
What was it like working with Chancellor Bepko? Was it a more personal relationship that you two had, or was it sort of a professional?
Nothing's a personal relationship.
Yeah.
He, in fact, and I started at IUPUI the same year in 1972.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got to know him a little bit, and, you know, remember visiting him at his office when he was the law dean, who was incredibly gracious and helpful then on any number of projects, and he was certainly that way when he was the chancellor and interim president of IU.
What about with Dr. Plater?
Same way, just really close personal friends.
Now, a lot of people have talked about the sort of unique relationship that Plater and Bepko had. Could you talk about that and how you saw their relationship?
I think they were an incredible team. I think they had the same goals for IUPUI to be the best that it could possibly be, and figured out how to make that work. That Dean Plater, I used to joke with him, as did other people, that why write a paragraph if he could write 10 pages? So, I mean, it's really long. Yeah, it's a really long speech. But, you know, he'd really think it through and put the case out there, and it was great. And that I didn't perceive that to be Chancellor Bebko's style, but he, but I think that, you know, Chancellor Bebko setting the aspiration and, you know, I mean, knew everybody in town, still knows everybody in town and in the state, and on all these boards, and can make all these connections and be such an incredible advocate. And Dean Plater, with the passion for improving undergraduate and graduate education and research, they just made a perfect team for pulling this off.
What about the new chancellor?
I like what he came up with, the doubling goals. You know, he doubled graduates, double civic engagement, double diversity, and I think that was a really good challenge to put out there, and we're coming remarkably close. That the number of graduates is skyrocketing, service learning has skyrocketed, diversity, you know, the Multicultural Center isn't open yet, but I think we've made important strides there. That so I think articulating those goals has been really important for IEPUI. And I think Dean Sakotmi has been just fantastic. He worked really hard as he came in to define an academic agenda, which is involved into a academic strategic plan. It's very clear, well stated, no secrets, it's out there. He funded the Signature Centers. He conceptualized enrollment shaping. I think he's also done a fantastic job, and I think he and Charles work really well together.
Now, in the pre-interview, you talked about how you'd been on a lot of search and screen committees for several people here at IEPUI. Could you talk about why you were selected to be on those and how that process worked?
Well, I think maybe it's because I'm compulsive again. But I mean, I think selecting new people is one of the most important things that happens on a campus, and it's a real privilege to get to help do that. I mean, a chair of the committee doesn't pick who's going to get the job. The chair of a committee needs to make sure that things are in place, that the faculty and staff from that unit can make recommendations about who the appointment ought to be, and you can do that best if you have an organized process, and I know how to organize a process. And in doing that, you know, I got to learn a lot about the units. That when Chris Keeley came as head of HR, I got to chair that. When John Mulvey came the police, when Frank Botta was in physical plant, when David Lewis became dean of the library, when Jay Gladden became dean of PE, TM school, when Nasser Pagar became the vice chancellor down Columbus campus. I've just done lots and lots of different searches across the spectrum of the university, and it gave me a great chance to work intensely with folks in those schools and learn from them. My big deal in life is camp. Like, I think camp is real important for kids, and I don't know if this is too crazy, but I think that sometimes if you're on a search and screen committee or in a program review, that's kind of like going to camp. And what I mean by that is it's real intense. It's with a limited group of people. You get to know them really well. You probably think it's even more important than it is because you care about it so much when you're doing it, which is, I think, like the camp experience. But then when it's over, you really value the work that you did and celebrate having gotten to work with colleagues that way. And I think that's another really special thing about, you know, doing a search and screen, is that you really dive in and do something real intense. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you hope a successful end. And so I've really had fun doing those.
Now, you mentioned that you were on a committee for Columbus campus. Do you do a lot of work with the other IU campuses,
or just Columbus?
Just Columbus.
I taught on an overload basis down there, I think beginning in 1974. Taught on an overload basis for a long time, and then have given a lot of faculty development talks down there and chaired that search when Nasser went down there. That's a fantastic campus.
Yeah. I've never been to that
campus. Oh, it's wonderful. That they our building is an old Air Force building, and Ivy Tech has a new building, and then they build a third fantastic, architecturally interesting building to connect the two of them, and which is consistent with what Columbus does with everything in architecture. But with the support of Cummins and the city leadership, it's a really important center of education for the state of Indiana. I don't know, you know, what their future will be, if someday they'll be on their own or whatever, but I've enjoyed the times I've gotten to work with them.
Does the Columbus campus compare in any way to IUPUI when it comes to University College and the recruitment of students?
They are trying. I don't know if they'll call it University College, but they're clearly trying to use some of those same practices that we use up here. And Susan Montgomery, who looks after good deal of that work, is an integral part of the Council on Retention and Graduation here at IUPUI, that they, with their new vice chancellor, have really ramped up in terms of contacting students to remind them, you know, you gotta come back, you have to register for fall. And right now their retention rate is way up from where it was a year ago. So I think they're making strong progress.
Do you ever go back to Bloomington?
Not real often. I mean, I like it when I go, and I especially like it in the fall and walk, kick the leaves, walk through the woods. It's just a great place.
It is beautiful. My best friend went to Bloomington.
Yeah, it's really neat.
And I went to Purdue, so we met up at the football game.
I used to go to a bunch of football games. I just don't now. I just, too much of a workaholic.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Do you ever go to IUPUI events?
I do.
Yeah.
I don't use the seats all the time, but I always have season tickets for the basketball games and go to lots of events on campus.
Now, as you look back at your career, what would you say are the most significant changes that you've made at IUPUI?
Well, I think building the psych department, that because in those few years that I was full-time in psych, we doubled in size and in research capability, student size, and then there's been really strong leadership at the department level. Right now they have world's best chairs, Kathy Johnson. She's fantastic. But I think getting it off to a good start in the School of Science, we were in a time of pretty difficult transition, and I was able to help the school make it through a couple tough years when a dean stepped down and before we had called a new one. I think in administrative affairs, bringing a faculty perspective of appreciation for the work of everybody else was a positive thing. And we also, straightened out some units, realigned some units, made it much stronger. In continuing ed, I inherited a huge deficit, and when I left, there was a huge surplus.
That's always good.
Yeah. The bottom line was good. And Jim East at that time had developed Learning Shop and Weekend College and was an international leader in serving adults come back to school. I got to work with him during those years. He was a really special person. But the main thing I've done is to get things organized so students can get off to a good start. With a whole team of people. Barbara Jackson was associate dean, did a brilliant job. Gail Williams, Harriet Bennett, Phil Seabrook, Kathy Barsky. I mean, just really good people, and the faculty have really embraced it. I mean, I mentioned before that they come to the meetings, that in lots of schools, faculty don't go to their faculty meetings very much. Well, they come to these faculty meetings, and when I ask them why they're there, they say, well, we're here because we love students, and we get to make a difference working with students. So sometimes when we're in our home academic units, we're kind of fighting the same battles we've been fighting for a while. But when faculty come to University College, they're doing what they want to do, because the whole point is to make the place better for students, and that's what we think we're doing, that they really help with.
When you walk around campus today, what types of thoughts go through your mind now that, since you were here in 72,
right,
and you were way out on the Purdue campus?
Right.
And
well, I mean, I'm usually thinking about when we're going to get the fitness center done, or when when we're going to get the next thing done. I mean, there are a lot of ghosts here. I mean, people who have died that I was close friends with, and you know, for whom I have very high regard, and from whom I learned a lot. But you know, they built this place, and they're still here too.
Yeah. Now, what would you say has made your relationships at IUPUI so successful?
I think it's having one story and being pretty persistent in trying to get there, and treating people right. That I have some colleagues who just are automatically naysayers, I don't go back and tell them often, but it's good when people have transforming experiences and finally get it about we're here to serve students.
Yeah.
But it's a challenge every day, you know, and I don't have all the right answers, but I think that, like with this IPS example that I mentioned earlier, we need to do so much more to be a better and stronger partner with IPS so that those students come here and are successful, that we're not going to solve that in a year, a decade, but you know, over time, we've really got to ramp it up.
Is there anything in your career that you would have done differently?
I think probably not.
No.
Yeah, because it's just been a lot of fun. I really like it.
Is there any advice you would offer to anyone that's looking to the future of IUPUI?
Well, I think key things are to continue to learn from other places. It's like go to meetings, read the journals. I mean, I take gobs of journals. I read them all. I send articles around to everybody. If you think you know you have it just right, then you better start worrying. the minute you think you have it right, you're probably in trouble. And so I think that we have to continue to figure out how to change and make it better.
Well, is there anything that I have left out or that you would like to bring up about the history of IUPUI?
No, it's just a really exciting, good, positive place. And I think the more that we can do to help, we're much better known probably internationally than nationally, and nationally than statewide, that we're at the top of the heap in terms of international recognition for the kind of work that we do with students. But people don't know that in Indianapolis. I mean, the parents will come and they'll say, oh, your orientation was wonderful. I went to X campus, no names, and it was just horrible there. And this is such a better place. Somehow, I hope that over time we can continue to get that story about how this really is a student-centered campus where students will be successful. And what we worry about is not how many books are in the library or how rich the alums are, but what we worry about and celebrate is how we've really made a difference for the students.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you for coming in today.
Okay, hope that was okay.